Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, June 7th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Art on Display. An event that spotlighted local artists and their artwork took place Friday across various Midland businesses. The inaugural Midland Art Crawl had local businesses act as the venue for presentation of art from local artists. Each location hosted the artists and the crawlers by providing live music, food, drinks, and other fun activities for everyone, according to a press release. The free event took place at the Faw Faw Gallery, Hand Cafe, Velvet Mesquite, The Blue Door, Eccentric Brewing Company, and the Arts Council of Midland. Sponsored by Midland AF, the Midland Art Crawl will take place quarterly this year, with other dates scheduled for September 2nd and December 2nd. This article is entitled MISD Battles Mental Health by Stuart Doreen. On the same day of the Uvalde school massacre, Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey was in Austin testifying before a House Public Education Committee about mental health steps being taken inside the district. The timing of the hearings wasn't lost on her or officials in Austin. When asked after the hearing about safety protocols taking place inside Midland ISD, Ramsey told the Reporter Telegram the district had planned to hire a safety coordinator to tighten up processes inside the district. Ramsey said a lot of work had already been done at the district's elementary schools with automatic door locking systems, single points of entry, and the use of badges for access. The district has made an enormous amount of progress in that area, said Ramsey, who added that with the help of safety coordinator and MISD PD, district officials will examine safety options and plan for things they haven't thought of. She said that the district currently has an officer at secondary campuses and MISD PD presence at MISD events like plays, sporting events, meetings, and graduation. Conversation on Mental Health. Since Ramsey has been in Midland, she has fought a two-front battle. The first is dealing with a school district looking to rebound from more than a decade of decreased academic performance. The second was leading a school district past the general disruption caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. The conversations we had at the committee meeting was about student mental health, adult mental health, and school in general, Ramsey said. We are seeing the same trends here that people are seeing nationwide. The pandemic not only set back educators when it came to academic performance, but handed them the same difficulties that others experience when it came to mental health issues. The pandemic and the lack of structure exacerbated emotional issues with students and staff. The testimony in front of the lawmakers told of Midland ISD's efforts to eliminate barriers and highlight its work with the Meadows Foundation. Ramsey said MISD's partnership with the Meadows Foundation had provided a good framework. She said a program was piloted at Bowie, Bush, Franks, Great House, Parker, Rusk, and Scarborough Elementary Schools, along with Legacy Freshman High School. The schools and campuses themselves can do self-inventory and look at incidents of discipline, Ramsey said. Do children and adults feel healthy at campuses, and is the administration meeting their needs? Then campus and district support center leaders can figure out what to do and how to move toward positive intervention. It's about educators teaching good behaviors to students and how to cope with what's happening to them. Behavioral health for teachers and students. And next fall, all district schools will get the training about behaviors and best practices in the classroom. Each campus had their own curriculum on behavior, Ramsey said. She said a product of the program has been a short-term reduction in office referrals and suspensions. Longer-term better behavior will lend to better student attendance, increased teacher retention, and fewer reports of teacher burnout, and better student outcomes. Everyone is receiving that classroom system training in summer, Ramsey said. It will ramp up so that in the next 3 years, it is district-wide. This article is entitled High Temperature to Reach 107 in Midland by Stuart Doreen. Midland's hottest day of the year is in the forecast, according to the National Weather Service. The NWS reported on its website that a high temperature of 107 degrees is expected Tuesday, and that Midland is likely to experience 7 100-degree high temperatures over a span of 8 days. So far, Midland is 2 days into that stretch, and triple digits have been recorded 2 times, 100 on Sunday and 103 on Monday. A high temperature of 107 degrees on Tuesday would be hotter than the high of 105 degrees on May 28th. In fact, it would be the hottest day since August 14, 2020, when the high temperature also reached 107 degrees. The NWS shows high temperatures of 102 degrees on Wednesday and Friday, 100 on Saturday, and 104 on June 12th. The lone day with a high temperature below 100 is Thursday, when the high is expected to reach 98 degrees. The average high for June 5th to 12th is typically 94 to 95 degrees. The forecast doesn't show a chance for rain through Saturday. The NWS has reported 1.67 inches at Midland International through 5 days this month. Still, the NWS shows Midland's rainfall through June 5th this year is 2.3 inches below normal. Drought conditions. The heat is expected to dry the land again. In fact, the Texas A&M Forest Service reported Monday that its drought assessment system, the Keach-Byram Drought Index, showed a rising index score in Midland County, 5 points to 543. That number had dropped by more than 120 points in the previous week, thanks to rainfall across the region. It remains to be seen if the scorching temperatures will increase the index rating above 575, forcing the county to extend its burn ban. Midland County Fire Marshal Justin Bunch has previously told the Reporter-Telegram that the county will not enact a burn ban until our KBI is at or above 575. This article is entitled P&Z OK's Alcohol Permit for Bar by Stuart Doreen. There is a new bar in the works for a shopping center on Briarwood Avenue across the street from Walmart in Northwest Midland. Officials with Why Not applied with the City of Midland for a permit for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a nightclub. Planning and Zoning Commissioner members approved the permit request during its meeting Monday afternoon at Midland City Hall. The Midland City Council must approve the request at a future meeting. The Reporter-Telegram previously reported Why Not held a hiring event earlier this year. In that report, it was written that the bar will strictly enforce cocktail attire. The lounge will be located at 4416 Briarwood Avenue, Suite 108, near Papa Murphy's and Taqueria Jalisco. Why Not is currently in operation, according to the city. The floor plan in the P&Z packet showed it has a total square footage of 3,210 square feet with an alcohol serviceable area of 2,587 square feet. The proposed days and hours of operation, including alcohol sales, are the following. Tuesday through Saturday from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. the following day. The city reported that the property was previously occupied by Mr. Vapes, an e-cig and hookah lounge, which had a specific use designation, SUD, for on-premises consumption in a lounge. However, the SUD expired back in January, thus requiring Why Not to apply for a new SUD. For more updates, follow the business on Instagram at Why Not Midland and Facebook at facebook.com/why-not-midland-10562-096-189-7824. This article is entitled P&Z Commission Denies Rezoning for Trucking Operations by Mella McEwen. A zone change request for 2605 West County Road, 110, was unanimously denied by members of the Planning and Zoning Commission Monday. Frank Mendoza had requested the zone change from SF1, Single Family Dwelling District, to BP, I-20 Business Park District, at a 3.570-acre tract in order to create a truck yard and facility. Raul Dominguez, owner of Stallion Tech Services, told commissioners his goal was to work with the city and show how a business could go through proper channels. He pointed out that there was a multi-well pad a stone's throw from his lot and an RV park nearby. He detailed for commissioners how he would immediately begin property improvements with fencing and surfacing to reduce dust and noise, and construction of a combination office and 2- or 3-bay truck stop would begin later this year or early next year. His assertions were disputed by Jim A. Baker, a neighbor, who told commissioners about the noise and dirt in what had been a peaceful neighborhood where he had lived all his life, and said the city was not enforcing its codes. Baker noted that the businesses Dominguez had referred to were in the county, not the city. Dominguez was told after the request was denied that he could appeal the denial and that the city council will make the final decision. Commissioners unanimously approved alcohol permits for a new nightclub and bar. Julio Lozoya's request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a nightclub was approved. Lozoya operates Why Not at 4416 Briarwood in a location that was previously occupied by Mr. Vapes, an e-cig and hookah lounge that let its designation expire in January, requiring Why Not to apply for the new designation. Proposed hours of operation, including alcohol sales, will be on Tuesday through Saturday from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. the following day. Commissioners also approved a request by Joshua Hernandez for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a bar. Hernandez is opening Element 14 at 4610 North Garfield Street and plans to operate Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day. In other business, commissioners approved a request by David Powlin of Lowe's Home Improvement at 3315 North Loop 250 West for a zone change from PD, Planned Development District for a Shopping Center, to amended PD in order to expand its garden center. The proposed new design will be about 19,237 square feet and remove 99 parking spaces, though Lowe's will still exceed parking requirements by 229 spaces. This article is entitled AAA, Gas in Midland is Fifth Lowest in Texas, by Stuart Doreen. The average gas price in Midland on Sunday was one of the lowest in the state, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported this weekend that the average in Midland increased to a record $4.38 a gallon. However, the price trailed the state average, $4.54, by 16 cents, and trailed only Lubbock, $4.31, San Angelo $4.34, Odessa $4.36, and Wichita Falls $4.37, among the 27 larger metropolitan markets AAA Texas surveys. Midland's average was even lower than Amarillo, which is typically the lowest or among the lowest in the state, but came in at $4.41 on Sunday, according to AAA Texas. One reason for the Permian Basin communities showing some of the lowest prices in the state was that they have raised their respective prices less during the past week, according to AAA Texas. In Midland, the average has increased 19 cents, which is more than San Angelo, 18 cents, but less than Odessa, 21 cents, Abilene, 30 cents, Amarillo, 26 cents, and Lubbock, 31 cents. The average across the state was up 30 cents during the last 7 days. Drivers in Midland were paying $4.19 for regular unleaded 1 week ago, $3.95 1 month ago, and $2.98 1 year ago. The state average was $4.24 1 week ago, $3.90 1 month ago, and $2.70 1 year ago. The national average on Sunday was $4.84, which was 46 cents higher than the average in Midland. This article is entitled DPS: Four residents from Seminole die, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Four residents of Seminole died Saturday evening when their vehicle collided with a trailer on U.S. 180, 12 miles west of La Mesa in Dawson County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Marie-Louise Dupre, 62, was driving a 2022 Nissan Versa westbound on U.S. 180. Around 9:45 p.m., a 2001 Freightliner Columbia with a trailer was stuck in the North Barrow Ditch of U.S. 180 facing east after attempting a U-turn on the roadway, according to a DPS report. The Freightliner's trailer was across the westbound lane of U.S. 180, blocking the lane. The Nissan Versa struck the right rear of the Freightliner's trailer in the westbound lane. Dupre was pronounced dead at the scene, as were Connie Garate Carroll, 78, and two minors, one a female 11-year-old and the other a 10-year-old male. All four were wearing their seatbelts, according to DPS. This article is entitled DPS: 23-year-old New Mexico man dies after collision on Texas 158, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 23-year-old man died Friday afternoon as a result of a collision on Texas 158 west of Midland. The Department of Public Safety reported that Diego J. Cota of Artesia, New Mexico, was driving a 2022 Hyundai Santa Fe southwest on the North Service Road of Tom Craddock Highway. When Cota's Hyundai reached State Highway 158, the vehicle failed to yield the right-of-way at the intersection, according to DPS. It was at that point that a 2004 Jeep Grand Cherokee carrying three people from Seminole struck the Hyundai. DPS stated Cota, who was wearing a seatbelt, died at the scene, and the three occupants of the Grand Cherokee were taken to Midland Memorial Hospital. The driver of the Grand Cherokee was in serious condition. The other two were in stable condition. DPS reported that the crash took place around 4:48 p.m., 6 miles west of Midland. This article is entitled DPS: Odessan Dies After Being Struck, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 44-year-old Odessa man died following a collision with a Freightliner truck tractor Sunday morning west of Odessa. Department of Public Safety officials reported that around 3:15 a.m., Angel Alvarez Alvarado was traveling west on 8th Street in a 2007 Ford F-150. At the same time, the Freightliner was traveling south on Texas 302. DPS reported the Ford F-150 failed to yield the right-of-way and was struck by the Freightliner just south of the intersection of Texas 302 and West 8th Street. Alvarado was not wearing a seatbelt and died at Medical Center Hospital, according to the DPS report. This article is entitled, DPS Searches for Driver Involved in Fatal Crash with Motorcyclist, by Mercedes Cordero. The Texas Highway Patrol is asking for the public's help identifying a vehicle that was involved in a fatal hit-and-run motorcycle crash. A 2009 yellow Honda motorcycle was struck from the rear by another vehicle believed to be a truck tractor with a trailer or other large commercial vehicle, 18-wheeler, according to the Department of Public Safety. The crash occurred at about 12:45 p.m. Monday on State Highway 176, about 8 miles west of Tarzan in Martin County. If you have any information about this crash, please contact DPS at 432-498-2131 or Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. This article is entitled MDC Board Paves Way for Future Activity, by Mella McEwen. Midland Development Corporation directors are preparing for future businesses with actions taken at Monday's monthly board meeting. Board members agreed to amend an agreement to purchase a 58.207-acre tract of land in the David Mims Business Park by extending the feasibility period for an additional 60 days. Stephen Lowry, chairman of the MDC board, and Sarah Harris, executive director, told board members they expect 42 LLC, which is representing the actual buyer, will close on the acquisition before the deadline provided in the amendment. Harris also asked board members for guidance on engaging one or more engineering firms to help obtain tenants for property owned by the City of Midland at Midland International Airport. Harris explained that there is a prospective tenant for the property. Based on the guidance she received from board members Monday, she said she will discuss MDC's engineering needs for prospects with several different firms in order to determine price and scope. She will then bring a professional services agreement or agreements to the board for approval at the next monthly board meeting on August 1st. Board members also passed a resolution approving the MDC's 2022-23 fiscal year budget. Harris said the proposed budget is generally in line with the current budget for fiscal year 2022, with general and administrative expenses and operating expenses flat. The only exceptions are the costs associated with MDC's purchase of the J.L. Davis properties downtown at 210 North Big Spring Street and 211 North Colorado Street for $4.9 million. The purchase impacted insurance, grounds maintenance, and building maintenance costs. Harris said budgeted sales tax revenues were increased from $10 million in the current fiscal year to $11 million for the upcoming fiscal year 2023. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, June 7th. Calvin Dale McKenzie. Calvin Dale McKenzie Dale passed away on June 3rd. He was born May 9, 1950, in Ballinger to Mac and Edna Ruth McKenzie. Graveside services will be held Wednesday, June 8th at 10 a.m. at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. Survivors include his wife, Letitia McKenzie of Stanton, daughters Kelly Pickens of Midland, Cindy, Jason Roberts of Big Spring, and son Tommy McKenzie of Little Rock, Arkansas. Four granddaughters, one brother Wade McKenzie of Midland, four sisters Edna Ringenair of Stanton, Brenda Dean Duke of Converse, Bonnie Bryant of Midland, and Lana Den Ledbetter of Midland. Many nieces and nephews and extended family. He was preceded in death by his parents and brother Herb Armstrong. Memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Carolyn Howard. Carolyn Harp Howard, age 83, of Temple and formerly of Midland, passed away April 27th after a brief illness. She was born to A.B. and Helen Harp June 25, 1938, in Hobbs. Carolyn was a beautiful wife, mother, and admired member of the community. She is interred at the Christ Episcopal Church of Temple. She is survived by a sister, Kay Harp Evans of San Antonio, brother George Harp of Arizona, as well as Paxton and Barbara. Carolyn was proud to be a Texan. Please be kind to one another. Remember, the eyes of Texas are upon you. Kenneth Money. Kenneth Lee Money of Midland passed away June 3rd. A memorial service will be held on Tuesday, June 7th at 10:30 a.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Chapel in Midland. Kenneth was born on May 31, 1939 in Roby to Troy and Grace Money. Kenneth was preceded in death by his parents, Troy and Grace, his sister, Laverne Campbell, his brother, Homer Money, and brother, Bobby Money, his brother, Wilson Money, his wife, Mary Lou, his grandson, Donald, his son, James, Jimbo Money, and his brother-in-law, Lynn Luxton. He is survived by his daughter, Carol Money, of Chico, Texas, his son, Donnie, and wife, Dawn, of Midland, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He is also survived by numerous nieces and nephews. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Larry Don White. Larry Don White, 73, of Midland, passed away on June 2nd. Graveside interment service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, June 9th, at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. Larry was born on September 24, 1948, to Fay and Stanton White in Stanton. He is survived by his mother, Fay White of Stanton, two sisters, Doris Holland, Debbie Brown, both of Stanton, spouse of 28 years, Karen White of Midland, three children, Russell White of Midland, daughter Stacy Haverstock of Midland, and son Bobby Hendricks of Austin, as well as nine grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his father, Stanton A. White. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Rose Snyder. Rose Snyder of Midland passed away of natural causes on May 19th in Midland. Rose was born on August 2, 1954, in Lafayette, Indiana. Those left to cherish Rose's memories are her children Lynn, Jonathan, Thomas, Brandy, Michelle, Hope, Clayton, Athena, Ronnie, Christopher, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren, brothers, nieces, and nephews. Rose was preceded in death by her husband Joe, mother Anita, grandmother Sarah, husband David. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 18th at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church, 303 East Shandon Avenue in Midland. Celebration of life will continue that evening at 410 Woodcrest Drive in Midland. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to St. Jude's or Children's Miracle Network, or plant a tree in her honor. Russell Hugh Adkins. Russell Hugh Adkins passed away unexpectedly December 14, 2021. He was born February 24, 1983 in Midland to Greg Adkins, DVM, and Nancy Goebel, DVM. Russell is survived by his father, Greg Adkins, mother, Nancy Goebel, stepmother, Janice Adkins, and his wife Jessica Atkins. Also surviving Russell is his brother Tim Johnson and wife Danielle. Russell's two children are Kylie Atkins, 11, and Caden, 6. Russell's surviving family also includes several aunts and uncles. The celebration of life will be held June 11th at the TL Ranch, 1795 County Road 410, Navas, Texas. Contact Janice Atkins at iCloud.com with questions. Death notices. Deborah Van Stavern. Deborah K. Ambrose Van Stavern of Midland passed away June 3rd, surrounded by her family. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 10th, at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Lady Mueller. Lady J. Mueller, 99, of Midland, passed away on June 4th, surrounded by her family. The family will receive friends on Thursday, June 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Roy Kuntz. Roy Marita Kuntz, 83, of Stanton, passed away June 2nd. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 9th at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 10th at First United Methodist Church in Stanton, with interment following at Evergreen Cemetery. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Tommy Gibson. Tommy Gibson, 62, of Midland, passed away June 3rd. The family will receive guests from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Thursday, June 9th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, June 10th at First Baptist Church, Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, June 7th. Trial in death of twins begins. Prosecutors seeking to convict an Odessa woman accused of killing twin six-year-olds with her car almost 3 years ago began their case Monday showing a body cam video taken within minutes of the incident. Angelica Garcia, 38, is charged with two counts of intoxication manslaughter in the July 3, 2019 deaths of Mia and Maya Coy, and is being tried in Ector County's 70th District Court before Judge Den Wallen. Odessa Police Corporal Chris Adams testified he was coming back from an assignment in Midland when he was dispatched to the North Service Road of East Highway 80 near the New Life Church right around twilight. He'd been told children had been struck by a vehicle, and as he approached the scene, he was waved over by a bystander. The rookie officer had just completed field training a month prior to the incident, and jurors vicariously lived through the scene as captured by Adams's body camera. As he jumps out of his patrol unit, Adams is assailed by the sounds of wailing and yelling. Walking quickly, he can see the two girls sprawled on the ground, heads nearly touching as their mother, Agueda Coy, and a man administered CPR to each of them with a small crowd hovering. Someone explains to him that their mother is a nurse. At the same time, several others are pointing Garcia out to him, one of them using an expletive. As Adams moves toward Garcia, she tries to get to the children, and he pulls her back and away. He makes her sit on the ground out of sight of the children as she repeatedly pleads to him, "Please don't tell me they're dead. Please, God." Garcia's husband, Cornell Hunt, tells Adams they'd both just come from Toby's Lounge at the MCM Grand Hotel and Fundome, and Adams asked him why he let her drive. Hunt responds that he didn't, but the rest of his answer is lost to the sounds around them. At one point, Garcia says, "I thought I was going home." Someone then summons Adams to help, and he asks another officer to watch Garcia. The twins' grandmother is having problems breathing and needs an ambulance. A small child is heard pleading, "Please help us," as the older woman sits in a chair, obviously in shock. During her opening statement, Assistant Ector County District Attorney Melissa Williams explained to jurors that the Coy family had owned and operated a firework stand near East Highway 80 and Club Drive for a couple of years. On the night the twins died, the entire family had gathered at the stand to discuss what they were going to do for Independence Day. As the adults planned, the children ran around and played. On that night, Garcia and her husband spent 3 hours drinking at Toby's Lounge, and the evidence will show Garcia had 7 cherry vodkas in the time frame, Williams said. The couple had arrived separately, and they left separately, with Garcia in the lead on the frontage road, Williams said. Garcia was 3 minutes away from the lounge when she went through the stop sign at Club Drive, hit a curb, and then the twins, and then a light generator, all without braking, Williams said. There was no hope for the twins, who were sent flying some distance, and they were pronounced dead at the hospital, Williams said. The prosecutor told jurors they'll hear what tests showed Garcia's blood alcohol level was that night. Under questioning from Williams, Adams testified Garcia smelled strongly of alcohol, had urinated on herself, was unsteady on her feet, and was slurring her words. Defense attorney Michael McLeish and Jason Leach waived their opening statement. Adams, under cross-examination from McLeish, acknowledged Adams may have urinated on herself because she had been injured, frightened, or shocked. He also said he was unaware that Adams had injured her mouth and later required stitches. Adams acknowledged the injury might be why she sounded as though she was slurring her words. The officer told McLeish he was unaware the frontage road used to go all the way to Midland. Adams testified he took Garcia's husband to OPD for a breathalyzer test after he refused to submit to field sobriety tests at the scene. Although Adams said he smelled alcohol on Hunt's breath and believed he might be intoxicated, he blew a .025 well below the legal limit of .08. He denied McLeish's suggestion that he took Hunt into custody to obtain more evidence against Garcia. Marks takes over reins as library director. For the first time since December 2020, the Ector County Library has a director. Howard Marks began his new position on May 31st. Randy Hamm, chairman of the Ector County Library Advisory Committee, lauded Marks's experience with both academic and public libraries and his great personality. Howard exemplifies all of the good qualities of a leader, Hamm said. Before he even put in his resume, he went and spoke with the staff about their needs, and he got a feel for the place. Not everyone would do that. He showed initiative and future thinking. Marks is taking the seat previously occupied by Rebecca Taylor, who retired after 13 years as director. Hamm explained the committee was originally created to discuss the future of the aging three-story building on West 5th Street. Ultimately, the committee decided after several months it needed to prioritize filling Taylor's position, recognizing it would be hard to plan for and fundraise for a new library without a director. The committee was getting ready to launch a regional and national search when Marks, who was the learning resource director at Midland College, reached out to him about the position, Hamm said. "He was local, which we loved, and he has roots here, which we loved," Hamm said. Marks already knew several members of the committee, himself included, he said. Prior to working at Midland College, Marks spent 4 years as a library director at the University of Texas Permian Basin, and he'd partnered with Odessa Arts on some projects, Ham said. He had developed relationships in the community on top of having management experience at both public and academic libraries, Ham said. He has also a progressive vision for the library that matched our vision. For example, Ham noted that Marks strongly believes the library needs to boost its Spanish offerings. Right now, less than 10% of the library's books are in Spanish, and yet Ector County boasts a Hispanic population of more than 60%. In addition, Marks also recognizes the need to address the technology gap at the library. Ham said, the pandemic made it clear the library serves a vital role in providing internet access to those who don't have access. Despite the advent of smartphones, computers, and tablets, Ham noted only 30% of the world's information has been digitized, so there still exists a huge need for libraries. One of the last places people can visit for free. Ham said the county asked the Ivy Group to conduct a 6-month needs assessment for the library and the advisory committee. Town hall meetings were held and surveys were conducted, and Marks will be presenting those findings to the commissioners toward the end of the month. Marks hasn't always worked in libraries. He obtained a bachelor's degree in communications from San Francisco State and spent time in the advertising industry as a copywriter. He worked in New York, Biloxi, Mississippi, St. Louis, Washington State, and Dallas. Once he got to Dallas, he decided he wanted out of the unstable industry and took a strong inventory test, which revealed he was suited to go into library science. For the first time in his life, Mark said he started scoring perfect marks while taking courses at the University of North Texas. His first job in his new field was at Fort Worth Public Library. I took a real natural affinity to reference in answering reference questions at the front desk, Marks said. Marks, who eventually earned master's degrees in library science and public administration, spent 3 years as the director of library services at Western Texas College in Snyder before heading to UTPB and later Midland College. While at UTPB, Marks said the library was renovated, an integrated library system was set up, and other new technology was brought on board. At Midland College, he oversaw another renovation and helped create ChapChat, an online resource that helped a great deal during the COVID shutdowns. I pretty much cut my chops at these places, and then this job became open, and I decided to apply and see what happened, Marks said. This summer's reading program theme is Oceans of Possibilities, and Marks believes the future of the library is filled with endless possibilities as well. What's it going to look like for the next 30 years? We're turning the page and starting a new chapter, and I'm very excited by that prospect, Marks said. This is really the start of a new vision to rebuild and rebrand for the next stage with a more robust and user-friendly layout and approach. The library already has a dedicated and helpful staff, and he just hopes to build upon it, keeping in mind readers' ever-changing needs, he said. For example, the library currently has 200,000 printed books and 20,000 e-books, and he'd love to see even more, Marks said. He'd also like to purchase some Apple products, expand the library's subscription-based services, and offer more programming for seniors. He's also mulling over the possibility of creating an app-based checkout system, allowing food and drink in certain areas of the library, and encouraging staff to wander around the library to see to patrons' needs. Among his other ideas, an artist residency program in partnership with Odessa Arts, the creation of a business center, dog-friendly Fridays, instructional workshops, a maker's space, bilingual story time, Wi-Fi upgrades, and yoga classes. While the community may one day have a new library building, Mark says they don't have to wait for it to be built to make some changes. In fact, there are spaces within the library that can be repurposed, he said. Don't expect to see too many changes right away, though. I've decided for the first month I'm not going to change anything. I'm just going to sit back and listen and learn and ask questions and read up. I want to talk to as many people as possible, he said. My MCH app offers New Care Avenue, checking medical records, paying bills, prescriptions, or even middle-of-the-night medical concerns can be accessed through My MCH Patient Portal. Introduced to the public May 10th, the portal provides patients and future patients with all kinds of access to information, Chief Operating Officer Matt Collins said. If you visit a doctor or the hospital, you may want to see your medical records, laboratory results, or radiology results. They may want to see what the doctor wrote in the visit summary. They may want to see the history of the medications that they've been prescribed their appointments, Collins said. What this does is it puts everything you want to know about medical center, particularly you as a patient, literally in the palm of your hand, Collins said. The app can be downloaded from app stores on your smartphone. Users have to go through a sign-up procedure so the hospital can verify their identity before MCH gives them access to their records. They go through self-enrollment, or if they are already a patient, they may already be enrolled. A new feature that we have that we're really trying to get out to the community is our telehealth feature or video visits, Collins said. This is for when you wake up in the middle of the night and have abdominal pain or your baby is colicky and you don't know what to do. You're left with a few choices. Do you wait until morning? Do you go to an urgent care, which is closed at 2 in the morning, or do you go to the hospital ER, Collins said. Some of the things that come up could be handled with an on-demand video visit, but if you need to go to the emergency room, you should, he said. But if you need medication or to talk to a doctor, this video visit feature is the way to go. You just open up the app, go through the few basic health screening questions, and within minutes you're on a video chat with a board-certified physician who will help you get answers to these questions, medications, and advice. If you need to be referred to a higher level of care, if he feels you need to go to the ER or urgent care, is going to help you there, Collins said. He added that this is aimed at expanding access to MCH, patient information, and on-demand video visits 24/7. All you need is a phone or a computer, and you can be connected to a physician in minutes, Collins said. The hospital has been working on the app for about a year. COVID slowed them down a little bit, but they launched it for employees in mid-April. It rolled out to all patients and community members May 10th. The employees have had good experiences, Collins said. He added that what MCH is trying to be is a one-stop medical shop for the community. Whatever you need from a health perspective, we're going to be there for you and help provide it for you at the right place, at the right time, with the right level of care. If you need an ER visit, we're going to be here. If you need to visit with a specialist, we'll be there. If you need a physician for a minor problem, 24/7 we'll be there, Collins said. Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said he thinks one of the neat things about the app is the telehealth where you can choose the first available physician or you can also select from the list of providers. It shows you the provider's names, photo, and their specialty or subspecialty. If it's abdominal pain, you can choose internal medicine. If it's a concern for a child, you can pick family medicine or a pediatrician, Tankersley said. It's really for people who are pretty sure of what they need, but they just want that validation from a physician, Collins said. If you have the flu or a cold and you received an antibiotic and it worked, you can tell the doctor. Collins said the doctors sign up for telehealth duty voluntarily. They get paid for the visit, but they're on a rotation schedule, and they all share that schedule around the clock, Collins said. Tankersley said it's a mixture of pro-care physicians and doctors from the platform as well. Collins said it's a network of physicians that sign up to participate, but they are all approved by MCH. It will mainly be ours, Tankersley said. Collins said there were three groups involved in developing the app: Medical Center, Cerner, a large provider of electric medical records, and Amwell, a firm that specializes in telehealth visits. We combine the expertise of those three entities to come up with this custom app. I don't think that any other hospital would have an app just like this because it's customized to Medical Center and Medical Center patients, Collins said. Collins added that there are other apps available for telehealth visits, but they are not associated with Medical Center. This one is a Medical Center product, so when you're going through the questions and answers, everything in there is Medical Center, Collins said. The app is free, but it's about $65 per telehealth visit, Tankersley said. There are a few insurance companies that MCH is accepting right now, but they are trying to expand that, Collins said. It's priced to match the level of service that you get, he added. Tankersley said he doesn't know of any other hospital with an app that is as all-encompassing. I think we're the pioneers of an all-in-one app, Collins said. Tankersley added that this is all HIPAA certified. That's why it's important when you sign up or log in, you have to go through the verification process, Tankersley said. West Texas Food Bank seeing effects of inflation. With gas prices nearing $5 a gallon and a gallon of gas going for nearly $4, inflation is impacting everyone across the Permian Basin, and the West Texas Food Bank is seeing it play out on a weekly basis. The food bank is seeing about 500 cars a week coming through the pantry, numbers not seen since April 2020. At the start of the pandemic, said Craig Stoker, director of marketing for the food bank, our numbers dropped when people started going back to work and they started being able to find things at the grocery store again. We went down to about 300 a week, but since the beginning of the year, they've started picking up again, and the lines are getting longer and longer and longer, Stoker said. Last week, 537 vehicles came through, he said. Luckily, Stoker said grocery stores have resumed donating again, and monetary donations have never fallen off, but food bank officials are concerned about the ever-increasing price of fuel. Transportation costs have risen about 35%, and the food bank distributes donated and purchased food across 38,000 square miles, Stoker said. Further complicating the issue, the food bank stopped charging some of its smaller agencies for deliveries during the pandemic because they couldn't afford it, but only a few have resumed paying it, Stoker said. The community has always been generous toward the food bank, and Stoker said he hopes that will continue. But he also hopes those who have never made a donation will consider doing so now. The food bank is also in need of volunteers. Many have gotten out of the habit since COVID-19 struck, he said. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the current inflation rate is 8.3%. The nationwide average for a gallon of gas is $4.84. Quick hits. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, tests will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. In Breja for Parkinson's. The Midland Odessa Big Springs Parkinson's Support Group has scheduled an informational session on In Breja for Parkinson's from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. today at Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Highway 191. Acorda Pharmaceutical will present a talk about In Breja, an inhaled form of levodopa. For more information, email Midland Parkinson's. Parkinson's at yahoo.com or visit tinyurl.com/4S7P7KEF. Blood drives. Vitalint has scheduled the following blood drives: Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Schlumberger, 7220 West I-20. Friday, noon to 4 p.m. Keller Williams, 4925 North Midkiff Road, Midland. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, 3500 West Golf Course Road, Midland. June 13th, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., Signature Care of Odessa, 2731 North Grandview Avenue. June 14th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., ConocoPhillips, 600 West Illinois Avenue, Midland. June 15th, 4 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Grace Lutheran Church, 3000 West Golf Course Road, Midland. June 16th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., First Baptist Church, 100 Agave Street, Fort Davis. June 18th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Odessa Bible Church, 3901 Pembroke Drive. June 20th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Women's Regional Tech Training Center, 1309 I-10 West, Fort Stockton. June 21st, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Sawyer Insurance, 817 South Stockton Avenue, Monahans. June 22nd, noon to 5 p.m., Gravity, 32 County Road, 203 Pecos. June 23rd, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., Kodiak Glass Services, 3110 South County Road, 1180 Midland. June 23rd through 25th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Music City Mall, 4101 East 42nd Street. June 29th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., Western Midstream, 991 County Road 300 Mentone. June 30th, noon to 5 p.m., Back in Motion Chiropractic, 1113 South Scurry, Big Spring. To make an appointment, visit donors.vitalint.org. Volunteers needed. Meals on Wheels of Odessa are in need of volunteers. Volunteer opportunities. Drivers, kitchen staff, and Mud Bug Fundraising. To sign up or for more information, call 432-333-6451, email volunteer@moodessa.com, or visit moodessa.com. OC Board spots open. Odessa College Board of Trustees places 4 and 5 are available, and the Board of Trustees will appoint a resident of those areas to fill the positions. The term for places 4 and 5 expire in 2027. Eligible candidates must live within the new place boundaries based on the results of the U.S. Census 2020 and approved by the Board of Trustees on May 24, 2022, and registered voter in Ector County Place 4 or 5. If you are interested in being considered for one of the available positions, please complete this application of interest. Link at https://forms.office.com/r/4LU5M4NSPW. Applications will begin to be reviewed on June 30th. Candidates will be notified thereafter regarding this election process. Contact Ken Zartner, Vice President of Administrative Services, at kzartner@odessa.edu or 432-335-6415 should you have any questions or need additional information.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.